This is Greater LA. It's KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis.
Got a full house today.
School day starts with a 9 a.m. Zoom call.
Oh, we can't see you. We see your background.
3- and 4-year-olds gather around their screens. Some of them still in their PJs. Others scoop cereal into their mouths. Some of them twirl around oblivious to the camera.
I think it's time to start our morning meeting.
The meeting starts just how a normal day would at Cottage Co-op Preschool in Pasadena.
Good morning, Clara. Good morning, Clara.
It's school with friends, but all of it, teachers, kids, learning, stories, it's all on a laptop or desktop or iPad. Adults are spending more time than ever with screens, and so are kids. Under safer at home orders, lots of kids now have more time with their parents, which is great, of course, but plenty of other parents are working, and screens have become both teacher and family favorite babysitter. For years, you may have been told to limit your kids' screen time. So now, a lot of folks, maybe you too, worry it might be too much. What do the experts say? Reporter Deepa Fernandez digs into it.
4-year-old Hazel has a lot to share with her friends as she sits on her couch and twirls a long strand of hair.
I found beautiful pebbles in the backyard, and I want to save them and wash them, and then have them for Cottage.
The morning Zoom meeting is just one way that Cottage Co-op Preschool is keeping their small students connected to each other. And it's a huge departure from a pretty fundamental principle the school used to adhere to.
So at our school, we had no screens whatsoever.
Jocelyn Robertson is Cottage Co-op's director. In addition to the lack of devices, there were no academics, no letters or numbers of the week. This preschool is all about play.
Yeah, you get just about everything you need really just from playing when you're a young child. When you're playing, and I'm not talking about video games, but playing in the world, you move your body through space, you make creative choices, you might enlist other people and negotiate the terms of it.
In other words, cognitive development happens in sandpits and when kids create their own imaginary worlds. Now, the preschool has to figure out how to nurture kids who are stuck inside, often alone. Turns out, maybe screens aren't the worst thing.
Hi, it's teacher Jocelyn. I'm having a good time, and I am ready to read books. And what I have for you...
I have a YouTube channel for the kids. I'm just reading stories on there.
Mr. Slinger was as sharp as a tack. He wore artistic shirts.
Having the children see and talk to their teachers is important, Robertson says. And it can give parents a small break. Mums and dads are juggling work and also needing some timeouts themselves.
The thing people are coming to me about is just being absolutely driven crazy by being home with their 3-year-old.
Mommy, what's that? What's that?
That's exactly what's happening to Culver City mum Helena Newberry Grant.
What's that, Mama? What's that?
It's my phone.
Prior to quarantine, she had never touched a screen, with the exception of maybe flipping through pictures on one of our phones.
Now Grant and her husband are both working their full-time jobs from home and dividing up the schooling and caretaking of the kids, 3-year-old Alice and 7-year-old Asora. Grant has many meetings during the day as she juggles Alice's needs.
Mommy. Mom.
So she's watching a lot of Disney Plus, Frozen, Frozen 2, and Grant's mantra has also become, let it go.
My personal belief is that she's under 3. Really, no good can come from any type of screen time, but we have to just roll with it, you know?
But
getting her to pull away from the screen can be challenging.
So 3-year-old Alice went from no screens to, well...
Sorry, just one second. She's currently pulling one of the phones out of my hand because she's come to believe that one of my phones belongs to her. I need you to wait just a few minutes, okay? So this is what you're hearing right now is pretty typical of when I say no to her about screens right now.
Grant is doing her best to balance her work demands and give her children the attention she wants to. But she worries about Alice.
I do kind of feel like she's gone into a phase of arrested development because of how much sudden screen time she has. And it's passive and she's like a zombie.
Kids are often very still and very quiet when they're watching screen media. But that isn't direct toxic effects, right?
Jenny Radesky is a developmental pediatrician. She says Disney is fine. The screen use to worry about is if the content is violent or loud or abrasive or excessive time on video games.
There's been a few studies suggesting that immediately after that, a young child might have a harder time focusing or organizing their thoughts. The executive functionings might be a little bit weaker.
Dr. Radesky authored the American Academy of Pediatrics 2016 guidelines on screen time for kids.
When it comes to young children, we think about any hour you're spending watching something on TV or videos or YouTube is an hour you're not spending exploring the world with your own hands, putting things in your mouth, listening to words your parents is speaking to you.
Dr. Radesky is clear that in these current times, parents should not consider it screen time when their kids are doing schoolwork on computers or video chatting with friends or grandma.
When you do something, the person on the other side of the screen does something back, and that's much more meaningful for infants and toddlers. It's technology used for the purposes of human connections.
Dr. Radesky empathizes with parents worried they're handing over the iPad too much.
Don't feel guilty about it. Parents are doing an amazing service by keeping their kids at home so you can peel back all of this extra tech time that they've gotten and you can make a new plan once the world gets normal again. And kids are resilient.
Resilience. It may be the silver lining for kids coming out of this lockdown, says child psychologist Dr. Joe Dilley.
No matter, you know, what we do and how much we try to protect our kids, they're going to encounter challenges, rough patches.
Kids stuck at home might be moody or have temper tantrums more than they used to.
So certainly kids are going to feel lonely, and some of them are going to not know quite how to express that, especially because they're not necessarily certain that that's what's going on.
And this is where parents can help kids, he says, rather than punish them for acting out. Imagine it from the child's point of view, Dr. Dilley says, when a parent empathizes.
I'm so glad that mom came alongside me, dad came alongside me and kind of pointed out, of course I'm feeling weird. It would be a little bit unnatural not to under these weird circumstances. And one of the ways that I'm feeling that I'm not used to feeling is lonely.
I asked Dr. Dilley if loneliness and being stuck at home count as an adverse experience, which all the experts say help kids build grit and resilience.
It not only counts as adversity, it is adversity because this is novel and unpleasant and it was not asked for. So it's surprising. It really throws us off balance, especially when we're kids and we have less of a paradigm, less of a frame of reference for what's going on.
And emotional impacts may go beyond just loneliness, he says.
So when we feel like our kids are in fact experiencing some anxiety or some depression, the idea would be not so much to fix it as much as to hear it, respond to it, model for them how to sit with it.
There's probably something in that advice for everyone. Don't beat yourself up for feeling down. Take it from 3-year-old Alice and let it go. For KCRW, I'm Deepa Fernandez.
Deepa Fernandez is a reporting fellow at Pacific Oaks College, which is funded in part by First 5 LA.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. You may have heard that many safer at home restrictions here in LA County will likely last through July at the earliest. But county and public health officials say there's a very gradual shift toward lifting at least some restrictions. Bookstores, clothing shops, they're reopening. And as of today, so are beaches. Well, with another shift may come a whole new wave of anxieties about going back to work for some folks, perhaps, or going out to more places than just the grocery store or the pharmacy, maybe just being stuck in traffic again. And that can be a heavy burden right now. Dawn Delgado is an EMDR certified therapist at Inspire Evolve Counseling. Hi, Dawn.
Hi, Steve.
It's been months that we've lived under these safer at home restrictions. I feel like we've sort of settled in, adapted in some way. Is that what you're hearing from people that you talk to?
Yeah, absolutely. My friends and my clients are getting into their routines and they're kind of settled in this state that we're in. And now as our minds start to go towards coming back online, there is a lot of anxiety in the air for many people. There's a new type of coping that's going to be required.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that new type of coping, this gradual reopening coping, if you will, of getting back to the routine, or at least some semblance of the routine. Why is that causing so much anxiety, do you think? Are people afraid that things aren't where they need to be for us to reopen? Or are people just, you know, the adaptation curve, as it were, you know, they're just trying to adjust, and adjusting can take some time?
Yeah, I think both of those things are really real and prevalent. If you think of us and our bodies as a nervous system, our nervous systems are wired to seek out threats, right? So with the safer at home ordinances, everyone went into their home and we had to make do without a lot of outside stimulus that we're used to. But people kind of settled in their own ways and have gotten used to it. But with COVID, and as things start to open up, this threat is invisible. This is something we can't see. This is not someone in a dark alley coming towards us. This is something that's in the air, that's on surfaces. And since our nervous systems are wired to seek out threat, this is an invisible threat. And that can only amplify anxiety for people. So it's not only coming out of, you know, kind of after vacation mode for some. I know it's not the case for everyone, but it's also going back out into our greater surroundings with an invisible threat. And our nervous systems are on. That anxiety is up.
It is fascinating to me, Dawn, because when people, like if I even encounter somebody and I try and stay as far away, obviously, as I can, or at least a social distance away, I don't know where they've been. I don't know what their deal is, you know, whether they've been in contact with somebody with this virus. I certainly don't want it. I certainly don't want to give it to anybody else. But even with people I know, I'm not absolutely sure where they've been or what kind of risks that they've been taking. And I wonder if we're all just feeling that way and it's made us more distant or weirder, or in trying to acknowledge that, you know, that there's this thing. You mentioned the invisibility of it. I mean, how does your mind wrap itself around that?
Yeah, it's next to impossible. We're creatures that seek safety and comfort, and there isn't a lot of safety and comfort right now as everything starts to open up and we want to see our friends and hug our friends. But that, like you mentioned, that just brings up a lot of questions. We don't know where they've been. We don't know if they're washing their hands. And I think, myself included, I've noticed a lot of social awkwardness. Even when I'm walking my dog, people, you can't see their faces, you can't see if they're smiling, you can't see if they're scowling. And I've noticed both situations, some people making eye contact and being a little extra friendly, and some people just not looking at you as if you were a threat. So everyone kind of handles it in their own ways and is coping in their own ways. But those anxieties and those tensions are definitely amplified. And I know with my clients, a lot of them, I'm providing telehealth services, and this is a topic of conversation because everyone is having to check in with, you know, the messages that they're getting about our city and our state reopening, and also check in with their intuition and what feels comfortable to them or what doesn't feel comfortable. So we're kind of sitting with mixed emotions of wanting to hug people and also wanting to kind of stay away from everyone.
Well, it seems like that distrust could continue. Are we going to be more reluctant to wanting to help a stranger or somebody that we don't know because we're afraid of getting this virus or afraid of giving it to someone else?
Right. That's such an important topic. How are we going to interact with one another? How are we going to reach out a hand to someone in need? I saw a child falling on their bicycle while I was walking my dog, and I had to stop myself from reaching out to help because that poses a threat to that child, right? So it is this level of unpredictability and uncertainty that we have now of how to interact. All of our social norms and social dynamics have been kind of flipped upside down. What do we do? You know, if we're used to being of service in our communities and handing out food and you know, volunteering with children, that may change for a lot of people. And it's a really individual decision, I think.
Well, individual decision, I mean, that's something that we all have to sort of deal with and come to grips with. But what advice would you give somebody if they're already anxious about that?
Yeah, the best thing we can do right now is to work with our nervous systems. We have, you know, with increased anxiety, our sympathetic nervous system is on. That's like the gas pedal in the car. So we need to work with our bodies and our nervous systems to help calm as much as possible so we can have conscious choice about how we interact with others and how we interact in the community. If we're reacting from a place of overstimulation and over anxious, then we're not taking a pause and we're not checking in with what feels right to us. So doing practices that stimulate the parasympathetic nervous system, which is more like the brake in the car, right? We need to have a balance of the gas pedal and the brake. Doing mindfulness practices that keep us calm, even if those weren't a part of your daily practice prior to COVID, now's a great time to integrate some meditative practices, some mindfulness practices. And that can be mindfulness with eating. That could be mindfulness before you go outside and get in your car. Different types of things that will slow and calm the nervous system is really important. And then also just identifying and naming our emotions. If we're reacting from a place of anxiety, we're not really checking in with the true emotion underneath that. And it might just be fear. And sometimes we need to name that emotion, acknowledge that it's there and breathe through it before we start reacting from it. So that's the advice I would give to people right now, is to really just be mindful of their bodies and the sensations happening in their bodies and try to, the best that we can, calm the spinning mind, because there's a lot to take in right now.
It sure is. And, you know, one of the things that you talk about is the fact that you're growing from this in a way, right? You're mm-hmm. You're trying to figure out how to deal with things in a different way or in an unusual way. Do you think we're going to grow from this? Do you think people are going to have a better grasp on things coming out of this?
Absolutely. I think it's going to take some time because we're in it right now and it's hard to see the forest for the trees. We're in it right now, just facing it head on. And I truly believe that we are going to thrive as a community, as a nation, as a planet, that we're going to thrive after this. I think there's a lot of research on resilience and post-traumatic growth that shows that, you know, when an individual or a community goes through a traumatic situation. And COVID has been a really traumatic situation for our planet. There's potential on the other side to not only bounce back to a resilience, a place of functioning, a level of functioning prior to the trauma, but there is potential for post-traumatic growth, which is bouncing back to an even higher level where we have many gifts. We have the potential for deeper meaning. We have greater compassion for others. You know, we have pulled together as a community and, you know, empowered ourselves globally. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm doing my best to anchor my clients in that potential, to look for silver lining and look for potential for us to overcome this as a community and, you know, really see what comes from that. But we are still in it, and it is going to be tricky for a while. We can't bypass that growth phase and be at the finish line just yet.
Well, there's, of course, the old line, adversity builds character, right? And here we are.
Absolutely. We should all have well-developed character after this pandemic is behind us.
I think you're right. Dawn Delgado, an EMDR certified therapist at Inspire Evolve Counseling. Dawn, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Steve. Take good care.
You're back now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Over the last few weeks on this program, you've been hearing a lot about ways that your city and region and fellow Angelenos might perhaps change as a result of this pandemic. And those changes are not all bad. Today, let's look at the interior of your home. I swear I'm not criticizing it. It's quite lovely, actually. But you've been spending a lot of time inside with all those video meetings and Zoom calls and TV hosts working from home. I'm looking at you, Stephen Colbert and Conan O'Brien.
Tell me about the room you chose. Why'd you choose where you are right now to host?
Okay, well, we'll do my room and then we'll talk about your room.
You go right ahead. My room has nothing to hide.
Yeah, yeah. Very. What is there to hide in this room? I have my bust of Teddy Roosevelt, my ever-present bust of Teddy Roosevelt. Of course,
yes.
I've got this mug, which is the original. That Robert Smigel gave me years ago that I've had on my talk show desk since 1993.
I recognize it from late night, sure.
The old, old Eisenhower mug.
Yeah.
I have a guitar. I have everything I need. I have another guitar right here. There's really not much to see in this room. I'm a simple man with simple needs.
Well, our very own Frances Anderton heads up KCRW's design and architecture desk, and she joins me now to talk about how the inside of your home is front and center these days with a changing work landscape. Hi, Frances.
Hello, Steve.
You don't have a guitar like Conan O'Brien, but you have a banjo that I'm seeing. We're actually on a Zoom meeting right now, so I'm looking at you. I'm looking at you, Frances Anderton.
Well, you are. Or are you looking at my background? Because that's what we're talking about here, is you see all these TV hosts and many of us viewers find ourselves drawn to what's behind them, the bookshelves, or the neat freak, spotless, gleaming white kitchen, like, say, John Heilman, who appears a lot on MSNBC. In your case, I'm looking at you. I can see you've got this kind of buttermilk wall. I can see a bit of artwork, just the corner of some artwork. You've got a wingback chair. You've got your Dodger cap on.
I do.
I'm reading a lot about you, but by everything you're seeing, you in return are looking at me. You can see a bunch, yes, of instruments. You can probably see a wall of books. And this is another thing that's so fascinating. We're looking into the lives of these people and finding a lot of them read.
So the glory, I guess, or is it the doom of Zoom, which is the fact that you can read so much. You said people, you can tell if they're reading, or maybe it's just a lot of product placement, or maybe it's just a lot of, this is what I want you to see, the veneer, as it were.
What's really fascinating about the Zoom meetings where we get to see our colleagues or people we do business with, and then TV, and I want to specifically focus on TV because we're seeing people who typically would have a bit of a distance from us. They're very highly made up. They're in a highly staged studio, and all of that has been taken away. We're seeing TV personalities, we're seeing experts, we're seeing pundits suddenly with stubble on their faces, women with less blow-dried hair, sitting in kitchens or living rooms that might be as messy as ours or might be as spotless as ours, depending on what our personalities are. And there's something that's so equalizing about that. It's really kind of breaking down that fourth wall that exists between us and the TV personality. And this is something that a lot of people are responding to extremely positively. It's one of the aspects, unexpected aspects of shelter in place that many of us have found incredibly compelling and really hope exists into the future.
And you know, Frances, I mean, it's interesting because even some politicians are getting in on the act, right? I mean, including one from California.
Absolutely. Congressman Armybearer, Democrat from Sacramento, as you just said, yeah, no, I happened to be watching MSNBC, I think it was late March, and I was completely struck by the bookshelf that was sitting behind him on the wall. It happens to be a very distinctive one.
The bookshelf, as well as, you know, letting folks not just see myself in my own home, but others in their own home, allow people to realize that we're all human beings and, you know, we're all in this together. And that's really important in this time when we're in a global pandemic.
So I just want to reinforce that this is a particularly distinctive bookshelf. I recognized it because it's by this quite famous designer, Israeli-British designer called Ron Arad. And I was really curious. It's kind of a coil that forms a spiral against the wall. You can't actually hold that many books on it, ironically. It's almost like a piece of sculpture. So anyway, I asked the congressman why he chose that bookshelf. And he said he just saw it in a store, liked it. But now it's become kind of a bit of a celebrity in itself.
It has its own following. And my staff lets me know that more people comment about the bookshelf than they comment on whatever I'm talking about on cable news.
People are actually more interested in the bookshelf than the politics?
Yeah, what does that tell you? I don't know if it means we're really superficial or actually we're just deeply interested in other human beings and we're learning something about them by the choices they make in terms of their interiors. But yes, absolutely, sort of observing and commenting on what people are wearing and what their interiors are like has become its own cottage industry. Already, you know, within the space of the last 2 months, there's a couple named Claude Taylor and Jesse Bari who've become famous for this Twitter feed that they started called Room Rater. And on Room Rater, they basically offer these very fast, snarky assessments of the design, the lighting in pundits' rooms. And now they've got into a place where they're sort of going back and forth with the pundits. And then the pundits are sort of pleased when they get a good rating. Now, I will say that on the one hand, we can see a whole avenue of industry for people in the business of interiors design, say, who are going to be called upon to come and improve people's interiors if this is going to be the way forward for broadcasting. On the other hand, I think what's utterly delightful about what we're witnessing right now is the sheer authenticity of the unadulterated personal statement of these pundits. I think that's what we're all responding to.
We're seeing glimpses into the homes and the lives of the people that we naturally see on television. And for you too, Frances, I'm seeing all of the things in your home. You're seeing some of the things in mine as well. Thanks for talking to us about it. KCRW's Frances Anderton, who heads up our design and architecture desk. Frances, thanks.
You're very welcome, Steve. It's so fun to see you at home.
Bye, Frances. I'm waving.